Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Kick.com, our senior college.
He's got some good pieces up right now to read.
Reporter.
A lot happening.
Trey, good to see you, man.
Guys, it is it's good to see you too. I don't know how we follow Morgan Wallen throwing chairs off a roof, but we're damn sure gonna try, right?
I'll end every show now by just throwing a chair in this studio.
Just toss one
somewhere
in honor of
Morgan Wallen.
I've been in that studio, so you're most likely gonna concuss Davey, so have at it.
Yeah,
Dave,
or just
calling.
Break the monitors in front of us. Something will be broken if we chucked a chair in here. There's not enough room to just throw it comfortably somewhere.
Trey, is Scott Drew gonna be the next head coach of Kentucky?
I think that we're getting to a point where Dan Hurley, I don't know if like officially Dan Hurley would like turn down the job, like put out a tweet, hey, I'm not going anywhere, right after I just won my second national championship. But I think all signs are kind of headed towards that Scott Drew direction. They had a conversation today, meaning Kentucky and Scott Drew did officially about the job. So now you've got to make, now you got to make the decision. Kentucky can't wait on Billy Donovan. You know, Billy's not going to leave in the middle of the season. This is not a Petrino scenario. I think now too, with the situation with Dan Hurley, yes, Kentucky would love to have Dan Hurley. And yes, Kentucky could pay Dan Hurley a substantial amount of money, but Dan Hurley is going to get that money from UConn. And I think that judging by his comments, obviously, you know, his wife doesn't want to leave just as much as Scott Drew's wife does not want to leave Waco. I've been told, but it's hard to pass up that opportunity for Drew, a guy that is cherished that job, who is friends with Mitch Barnhart. I'm sure there was a very good conversation had about financials and whatnot. So it looks like that, but guys, as you know, with coaching searches, we could get like a big one out of nowhere. And I don't know, maybe Hurley decides too. Maybe there's somebody else, a sneaky candidate that nobody's really reporting on, especially I haven't heard. So it's going to be interesting.
Does Bruce Pearl take this job if it gets to Bruce Pearl?
Absolutely. You take that job if it's Bruce Pearl. I think Bruce Pearl could go in there, and I think Bruce Pearl could get you to an Elite Eight within, you know, two years. I think that, look, he has a track record, man, of turning around programs. Look at what he did at Tennessee. I could go back further than that too, if I wanted to, back to those Milwaukee days, but I'm just saying, look what he did at Tennessee. Look what he did at Auburn. And the fact that he knows the conference so well, and also the ability to recruit. I mean, look what he's done at Auburn, bringing in the big name guys down there, but also at the same time being able to use the NIL that's provided. So I think, you know, if Bruce was meeting with Mitch Barnhart today, and Mitch Barnhart said, hey man, you want the job? I think there's a very good chance that Bruce would wrap his career up in Kentucky. And I think that would be a fantastic fit. It just doesn't seem like at the time, at this moment, that's where Mitch Barnhart and the boosters are wanting to go.
Well,
it'll take is Scott Drew saying no, and then everything else starts to tumble.
So just hypothetically, what happens if Scott Drew said no and Bruce Pearl said no? What's the perception of this Kentucky program?
You better go back and offer Nate Oates $13 million to come be the head coach at Alabama.
What about Patino?
That's a good one. And somebody brought that up to me today. I just don't feel like Kentucky's going to go back down that road again. When it comes to Patino, a lot of questions that would have to be answered. I don't know if there's a fit right now for Patino at Kentucky. Yeah. Like, he fits at St. John's. Like, that's a great spot for Rick Patino. He's about to grab a couple players out of the portal. One of them's probably about to be Toby Awaka. I just feel like that he's in such a good spot that this job is, and you know, like I try to put it like the Alabama level too. Like, you know, we forget about that, you know, the Nick Saban, you know, ripple effect that happened in college basketball, in college football. And it's such a big job. And I'll ask the question to you guys. Is this the same situation where you would have to follow the so-called legend at Alabama. So maybe you wait for that person to flame out, or do you just take it now and you say, okay, I'm going to go try to win immediately at Kentucky, but damn, we got some high expectations.
It's I think it's different, Chad, to his question, because Saban, fan base wanted Saban to stay.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, Calipari did a good job. He was there 15 years. I'm not trying to downplay what he did, but there, no Kentucky fan is losing sleep over John Calipari leaving. No. And Mitch Barnhart's not losing any sleep over. And that's where I want to go next, Trey, is where is Mitch Barnhart in all of this? Given what we saw with Calipari's comments in the Bahamas and this sort of uncomfortable split between the two, it really started going downhill then, and he's the guy now in charge with finding the next guy for Kentucky basketball after siding with the Kentucky football coach when the basketball coach admitted what we all knew, which is Kentucky is a basketball school. Now he's the guy hiring the next basketball coach. So how does that fit into all this?
I think it's a tricky spot. I think Mitch Barnhart, and I spoke with a couple of people about this today at Kentucky. Mitch Barnhart is in a spot where he knows what his boosters want, who, by the way, are going to provide all the funds needed for NIL and whatnot going forward. But at the same time, you're right. Everything kind of went to hell in a handbasket when John Calipari was sitting in the Bahamas and, you know, he invited four or five reporters over to his big suite at the resort and said, hey, look. And he was pissed off because they wouldn't give him a back, you know, they wouldn't update the basketball practice facility. And I understand that part. But at the same time, he threw Mark Stoops underneath the bus, threw the Kentucky program underneath the bus, so much so that Mark Stoops and Mitch Barnhart had to hold a press conference, if you guys remember that, to really point out, hey, you know what? We're not just a basketball school. We're football. But if we're being very honest with each other here, I think we always are, Kentucky football momentum usually lasts until the middle of October when they catch that first or second loss after starting the season undefeated, and then everything switches to basketball. You know, and I'm not trying to take a shot. I'm just looking at reality over the past number of years with Mark Stoops. So I think Mitch Barnhart's in a spot where you got to go out and you got to make a grand slam hire. Why? You force Calipari out. Like there's no doubt. Like I know that they sat down, you know, 4 days after the season ended, Chad, and had that little kumbaya on the local BBN network. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You wanted Calipari gone. You couldn't afford it because your booster said, well, damn, I'm not paying you $33 million. And then let's add on probably another 20 for a new staff, a new NIL. You're not getting that right now. So Mitch Barnhart, when he finds out that, hey, Calipari's talking with Arkansas, there's two things that were going on at that time. Mitch Barnhart was thinking, hell yeah. Okay, here we go. I get to make a hire. This will be on my end. And by the way, if Calipari even tries to act like nothing's going on, you've got him for breach of contract. You could probably technically fire him and you wouldn't have to pay him the $33 million.
Trey Wallace with us. Outkick.com is where you can read his work. Also, part of all that is Kentucky had just given or just had extended and renovated the football facility, right, at Kentucky?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Along with a couple other different facilities around there. Did some stuff to the baseball park as well, if I'm not mistaken, too. So, like, they're invested. They're getting enough money. You know what I mean? Like, so this was, at the end of the day, this was just a split that needed to happen. No, Kentucky fans didn't want Calipari back. And there's some of them that'll blow up in your DMs and, or your messaging and say, oh, well, don't talk bad about Calipari. It's like, what the hell were you guys doing for the last 3 months?
What does this – so, well, I think we know the answer to this.
Yeah.
The SEC, universities, programs, they were told, you're going to invest in basketball. You're going to invest in basketball. So the SEC is about to get even stronger in that regard. Calipari's staying in the SEC, and Kentucky's about to take a coach from a strong program and bring them over to the Southeastern Conference.
Isn't it interesting that move that Sankey made years ago where he said, you know, he huddled up the coaches and said, hey, look, we're taking this more seriously now.
Yeah.
We're going to invest more money into this. We are going to be good again in basketball. Now look at the results that have happened since then. We've seen it. It's proven out. Okay. National championships. Okay. Whatnot. But overall, the basketball has gotten better. So now the fact that you get Calipari out in Fayetteville, who's going to have, thanks to John Tyson, the chicken guy, he's going to have about $5 to $6 million to spend on NIL. He's going to buy himself a roster. At the same time, at Kentucky, they're like, okay, well, we saved $33 million. So let's invest $4 to $6 million and let's try to buy ourselves a roster as well. Calipari just went about NIL a little bit differently at Kentucky than other coaches do at other schools. You know, he felt like, okay, well, I got to make the phone calls. I got to be the one, you know, that raises this capital, where he comes out today and he says, well, I don't have to do that anymore at Arkansas. Well, okay. It's because there is one donor who is literally, and by the way, it's his one really good friend. He's paying half his salary. And at the end of the day, he's giving him a crap load of money to go out and buy a national championship.
So Musselman had Arkansas in the Elite Eight back-to-back years. I'm curious. Let's flip it. Let's look at the success of Alabama right now.
Yeah.
Where can Nate Oates take that program?
National championship game. National championship game, not Final Four, national championship game. I think the same way that he is producing at Alabama is almost like the same way Hurley is kind of producing at UConn, minus the national championship. Like, he's rebuilding rosters. Like, he, you know, you lose five players. Okay, I'm bringing more players in. We're going to compete for a national championship. You know, you look at Dan Hurley's squad from last year. What all they lost? Okay, what they do? They just reloaded. I think Nate Oates has the opportunity, if he can continue recruiting the same way and if they continue spending the amount of money that they have on players to get them. Yes, he can win a national championship. And I think there are a number of coaches in this conference that could end up, you know, back in the Final Four when it's all said and done. My biggest question is, how much leeway are Kentucky fans going to give the new coach if they don't come in there and make it past the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, which is all we've seen for the past five seasons?
Depends. If Bruce Pearl's there, he'll sell it. You know,
absolutely.
If it's someone else, maybe good luck. Depends on the level of that coach.
Well, and there's also no excuse for it to be a long-term rebuild. In today's world of college basketball, it's Kentucky. Go get some top mid-major transfers and go be a five seed in the tournament year one and win a game or two and then roll from there. I mean, I don't think anyone for Kentucky is expecting them to go, boy, they're going to have a losing record in year one and they're going to go 500 in year two and then maybe they'll get to the tournament in year three. This is not old school college sports anymore. You can turn things around quick, good or bad, right? We've seen it where it flips. Look at Arkansas and Eric Musselman. You can go from Elite Eight to getting blown out by 40 at home pretty quick, you know, in a college program too.
Well, I'm kind of interested in y'all's take. I posed this to two different head coaches today, and I got two different answers for them.
Okay.
I said, who's under the most pressure right now to win immediately? Is it Calipari at Arkansas, or is it the new head coach, whoever that might be, at Kentucky?
Well, it's not win immediately. You have to win to the level that Calipari just left.
It's Kentucky. I think it's always Kentucky.
It's going to be
pressure-wise.
Yeah, I mean, Arkansas, again, Calipari can come in there and sell whatever he wants to for years. You know?
Right. Yes.
Trey Wallace joins us weekly here on the show. You can read him daily at outkick.com. Trey, thank you, man. Have a great rest of the week. And check out the Trey Wallace podcast. It's available also at outkick.com under the podcast and shows page. Thank you, Trey.
Yeah, guys, lots of news going to be coming out in the next couple of days. I'm sure we'll find out a new Kentucky coach. And it never ends, guys. And hey, by the way,
we're on Call the Hogs watch too with Calipari right now.
Yeah, we need to see it.
Starts at 6 o'clock Eastern. And by the way, just throwing this out there, going to a little nugget for you guys.
Okay.
The transfer portal opens up on Monday. So go ahead and prepare for madness.
Oh, yes.
Y'all be
March
good.
Madness Later, ends. Brother. Transfer portal madness begins. And it's always mad times when Trey Wallace is writing. We'll be reading it, Trey. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, there's Trey Wallace.
Portal madness.
Check him out at outkick.com. Chad, coming up, primary complaint and John McClain. That's next on Hot Mic.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Yes, it is about that time. About that time, Chad, to air our grievances. Hot Mic with Huntley Withrow here at outkick.com/watch. You can stream the show live here each day. Post-show clips, highlights, and more. All the videos there at our YouTube page. Just search out Outkick. We hope you'll subscribe while you're there. And, Chad, we are also streaming live on X, Facebook. We've got that, plus podcasts.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Name them all.
Whatever platform. I mean, you could. It's like trying to find your favorite Major League Baseball team on the different outlets you could find them on. You throw us a podcast outlet, and we will come back to you and say, yes, 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 yes.
Yes.
We are on that outlet.
You will not complain
every time
about the lack of options. That's for sure. But we will
let the boy watch.
You let the boy watch.
Or let the boy listen. Whichever you want to do. You can watch or listen or both.
Watch.
If you want to. God, Eastbound and Down. Yeah. Gone too soon. Show that could still be on air.
Leslie Schaefer.
Ashley Schaefer.
Oh, Ashley Schaefer.
Ashley Schaefer BMW.
Am I thinking of someone else?
And Kenny Powers. Probably is a Leslie Schaefer that owns a car dealership somewhere in the South.
There's a...
Well, definitely an Ashley Schaefer. Yeah, though.
Ashley Schaefer. With Ashley Schaefer BMW, is that what you said?
I think it's Ashley Schaefer BMW. This is dealership.
We just need the wig and the sunglasses is what
it's
we need.
Amazing.
We complain each and every week at this time. It's time for Primary Complaint.
It's time to air our top grievance of the week.
You can complain all you want.
My job is so unfulfilling.
Run away from your feelings.
It's time for Hot Mike's Primary Complaint.
Guys, my primary complaint this week is the poor customer service and the excuse that, well, you know, it's we don't have enough workers or we're trying to be cost effective, so we've had to downsize our employees and the list there. I simply point to laziness. It's not a lack of budget. It's laziness on behalf of the employer and the employee, because all you have to do is look down this week, Chad, to Augusta National, a tradition unlike any other. And it's more than just the golf. It's actually the customer service and the speed at which I can get through to grab a sandwich, pimento cheese, or maybe a nice beer, you know, American, domestic, you can get a domestic, whatever you want. They've got it. It is cold and it's fast and it's
cold and delicious,
cost effective. The excuses, while they're thrown out there, aren't that valid, because I can see some of the top places in America doing it way better. Those places, Augusta National and Chick-fil-A. That's my primary complaint.
They really do have it right when it comes to those two places for customer service. I understand to an extent when you have a media company, it's public service and you're serving your audience. And I know that there's an editor somewhere that is likely telling writers to go ahead and give me your way too early top 25 the moment a season ends.
Immediately.
Right? The moment it ends, way too early top 25. We need it. We need it right now. We need it fast. That's the people want. I'm here to tell you it's not what the people want, because it's nothing. It's stupid. It means nothing. Transfer portal hasn't even opened. Nothing's closed. People are entering the transfer portal. It's crazy. No one knows what a roster looks like yet for next year in current college sports, especially in college basketball. So your way too early top 25 is completely and utterly meaningless. And it's even more meaningless when I glance at them and you don't have UConn number one and you have them eighth. You're not paying attention if UConn's not automatically number one and you're way too early top 25. But I don't want to see them regardless, because there's no way to know right now, because rosters are not set. And that is my primary complaint.
They're going to click on it, though, Chad.
I clicked on it, too.
Click, so scroll, and see where...
I'm part of the problem. Guilty, guilty, guilty over here, okay?
Click.
But I still hate it.
Gentlemen, for my primary complaint today, it revolves around landlords not giving adequate notice that other people will be in the home. Now, listen, I like my landlord a lot. He's my friend as well. So it's one of those things to where I've not had, like, problems that have persisted. But I guess he just forgot to let me know there's going to be a bunch of painters in the house. And so at 7 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and there's four people speaking Spanish right outside my bedroom. And whenever you hear that and you're like, well, I know for a fact I'm in the house I've been in for the last couple of years, you start to question what's going on. Now, later I do look at my phone. I got a text at like 5:30, which the landlord also lives there as well. And he's sent the text saying, hey, there's going to be some people here. Dude, 5:30 is not going to cut it. I'm asleep. I'm not going to wake up because I hear a text. And that's my primary complaint.
Well, that's brutal, man. Well, at least you weren't. See, I thought you were home alone at that point. And that you've got the painters in the coming in with the key access.
Yeah, no, he at least let them in. If they had gotten in and I knew he wasn't there, then I really would have been like, what the hell is going on?
I feel like you're being invaded. What is happening? Why are these people in my home? That's tough.
So yes. Then, yeah.
Did they do a nice work?
Oh, they were still working when I left this morning.
They move his bed so they can paint his wall.
Fortunately, they didn't have to get into my bedroom. But of course, like, you know, I'm like, I get there's random people out there, but it's like, listen, I got to go take a leak. And I just walk out there in my box. There's three people just start staring at me. I'm like, I don't care. Go in the bathroom. And we'll see how they did whenever I get back to the house later tonight.
Is there anything more emasculating than when another man is in your house fixing something while you're not working? Like, yeah. I'm just there during the day. I'm the only one there. And they're like the plumbers there doing something, and I'm just acting busy.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, like I leave the house for a little bit. I'm like, I'm going to run an errand. I'm going to go for a run. I hope everything's okay in here. But when they're in there, or when the dude who knows how to fix everything, you hire the handyman, I don't even know where to cut off the water or like what needs to be done. I'm right. Like, it's somewhere around here. I'm not quite sure.
You got to find some. I'm gonna go out here and mow.
It's even worse
when there's a language barrier.
And that is what I do, Hutton. I start doing yard work, even if I don't need to, just so I show that I have some worth.
Yes,
that I can do something, and I'm not just sitting there watching someone work on my home while I do nothing. That's my play.
Is it always emasculating when we have John McClain on for us?
Well, he's way more man than we'll ever be.
That's right.
So yeah, I think so.
He's a Screen Actors Guild voter.
He's got his SAG card.
Yeah, he does. He's also,
I'm ready for him to show us the SAG card, although that may be illegal, like showing your credential at the Super Bowl.
Pro Football Hall of Fame
for all I know.
Selector. He's in the Hall of Fame. And he's an actor.
Actor,
that's right. He's been in several films.
Award winner.
He joins us now. John, good to see you. Do you have a primary complaint this week? Are you complaining about anything specifically?
I'm not complaining about it, but I'm worried about it. Scott Drew going to Kentucky and everybody at Baylor, the fans, players, everybody, we're all on the edge of our seats. He's got a 17,000 square foot home. It's taken him 2 years to build. He's about to move into it. He's the fifth highest paid coach in the country, and he's got his best recruiting class ever. But if he takes that Kentucky job, everybody will wish him the very best, because he authored the most remarkable turnaround in the history of college basketball.
He just posted a photo eating chips and salsa with the owner of the bank that contributes so much to Baylor down there. I don't think he's leaving, John. I think you're going to keep your guy.
Well, I hope so. He's been at one of the top boosters, sent his plane, and he arrived in Lexington at noon. So do we think he's met with him and then turned around and gone back already?
I just know there was a post at 11:58 a.m.
Today or was it yesterday? Was it today?
It was April 10th. That is today.
But we don't know when that photo was taken. Well, yes, we do, based on
Matt Jones. There's been some Kentucky fans who apparently called that restaurant and actually got in touch with Scott Drew.
Put him on the phone.
And said, Kentucky needs you. And the report was that he just said, wow, that's pretty impressive that you found me here. And the whoever was at the restaurant handed him a phone. And that's what he was told. But he was there eating with is it Alliance Bank? Is the owner of the bank that contributes to Baylor?
I have no idea. But there's another story I read. They tracked the guy's plane at picking him up and landing in Lexington at noon today.
Plane tracking season. It's the best.
Posted that as well. But anyway, Baylor's hoping they don't lose him. He turned down Louisville. He got another extension in money. I don't think he signed it yet. Making about $7 million a year goes a long way in Waco. But if he wants to go to Kentucky, it'd be a different situation, because he'd go to a program that used to be the best in the country, now is not, and he'd be under a lot of pressure every day, where in Waco, he's under no pressure at all. Probably the biggest pressure he faces is which Mexican food restaurant where he wants to get his chips and dip.
John, over the years, and we've seen it really just jump astronomically recently, buyouts. Don't see that in the NFL. You're trading for the coach in many cases. And in many cases, especially college football to the NFL, for this example, the coaches in the NFL are making less than the college coach that's in the, you know, top 25 paid. Not the top 25 rankings, but the top 25 paid. The numbers, why don't you think the NFL numbers match up by and large? We had a game a couple years back. Does Vrabel make more than, you know, random coach Shane Beamer? And the answer was no per year. I found it very fascinating. Why is that the case in the buyouts being so large in college compared to the NFL?
First of all, we have no clue who makes what in the NFL. There's no official thing. If you want to hire a new coach, like an owner, he can contact the league, and the league won't tell him, well, Bill Belichick makes this, Andy Reid makes that. What they do, they will give you numbers per season, and you could guess, okay, well, it's $20 million that this year. It's got to be Belichick. $15 million's got to be Pete Carroll or Andy Reid, and I'm talking about last year.
Yes.
And so that's the numbers they have to go by, and those are the only thing that's really official from the NFL. Everything else is guesswork by the media. So I don't know. You know, they could, how many NFL coaches could they pay this coming season out of Jimbo Fisher's buyout?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. That is a great question.
Yeah.
Many of them. Many of them. Peacock is going to stream a Friday night game of week one, Eagles and Packers, to be played in Sao Paulo in Brazil. This is the move that Goodell, I think, wants his legacy to be, the move to global. How far does it reach, John? Because they've added two more. They're playing in Spain. That we know they're playing in Germany, and they're playing in London. They want to go to Mexico. Canada, I'm sure, is going to count. It should. What is the global goal for Roger Goodell before he leaves in 2027?
Now, why do we think they're doing this? So they can sell some more caps that people wear? No, it's gambling. These other countries are way ahead of us when it comes to legalized gambling. They've been wanting to go to China for years. At one point, they were going to Hong Kong, and I was trying to talk to people at the league office in New York for getting the Oilers to go, and I reminded them the Oilers sold out Mexico City, the largest crowd in history for a preseason game. They sold out the Egg Dome in Tokyo, the largest crowd in Japan, Japanese history. And then since we consider in Texas, El Paso being in Mexico, they sold out the record there. I said, so it makes sense. You should have the Oilers playing that game in Hong Kong. And of course, I wanted a free trip over there that the Chronicle would pay. And yes. Then they said, well, who was it that they played? And I said, well, it was a girl boy. They played the Cowboys in all those places, but that was only a minor point.
Yeah, right.
So we've seen the Texans playing in Mexico City and England. And I suspect with C.J. Stroud and the talent they're stockpiling and the popularity of Stroud and D'Amico Ryans, they'll have a lot more primetime games than no primetime games last season. And eventually they'll be back on the road. They want to go to China. Not sure they can do it with relations as they are, but if China gives them enough money, they will. They want to go to India because in India, I'm told that they bet as much. There's so many people in India, but they bet so much. The NFL's talking about $100 billion coming in from gambling over the next 10 years.
They wanted the revenue to be $25 billion. They're there. That was a goal a few years ago by the owners. Would they go to Saudi because other leagues are going?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you a very interesting thing. It's the NFL has a rule against foreign ownership. So what would happen with the Saudis? You see Washington being sold, what was it, $6.05 billion?
Yes.
If the Saudis came in there and said, okay, we'll give you $25 billion to buy the Washington franchise. Now, what do we think the NFL owners would do? Would they say, nope, we've got a rule against foreign ownership? They would be in there revising those bylaws so fast.
Immediately.
Because they're all about the money. And that's scary. You know, would they go there? I don't think they would go there anytime soon. But, man, if they're paying you, all of a sudden they say, okay, we'll give you $20 billion to come play a game over here, which is chicken feed for them. They're there.
They're paying WWE $50 million for an exclusive pay-per-view each year. Each time they're there, they're getting $50 million. There's no telling what the NFL could receive even for a preseason game from them. There's no telling.
I want to see WWE go to Saudi Arabia and put on a match there with the scantily clad women.
They actually did this past time.
Did they?
Yeah.
Did they make the women cover up?
The first couple times, the women didn't even perform. Now they actually took some, they were actually closer to what they would normally wear on a Monday Night Raw.
Well, that's against the law. That's, women can't be seen in public, but, you know, everybody will do whatever it takes for money. But I'd right now, when it comes to Saudi Arabia, I'd just like to see the golfers get back, get their act together.
Yes.
So we can have a Masters every week where we can see all the best players every weekend.
Great point.
John, our buddy Pete Prisco, CBS Sports, I like his no-nonsense attitude, so I like to check out his mock draft. And I know this is mock draft season where there could be 3, 4, 5 mock drafts before all said and done. But looking at his this morning, and not only is J.J. McCarthy skyrocketing up draft boards, if you look at it, he's got him going 3rd to the Patriots and Drake May falling behind him with the Vikings trading up with the Chargers to take Drake May, which leads me to the question. What has happened to Drake May? Because he felt at one point like the surest thing at quarterback in a draft where there weren't a ton of slam dunk, surefire options, and now he's fallen to 4th. What do you think about him and where he likely ends up?
I think, first of all, it's preposterous that J.J. McCarthy, coming out of the season, nobody was talking about him being a high pick. And he puts on his shorts and his T-shirts and runs around out there. Now everybody loves him because of his shorts and T-shirts and his personality, too. And May, I don't know what the deal is. The guy hasn't shrunk. He's still got a great arm. He's still got mobility. He didn't have as great a season last year at North Carolina that he did the year before. And I admire the guy because Mac Brown said he was offered $5 million by another school to come for a season, and he turned him down. And I'm sure he got something out of it from North Carolina, but I still admire the fact he said no to stay there. And he could turn out to be the best quarterback in the draft. But it's amazing to me how everybody's fallen in love with J.J. McCarthy, and has nothing to do with what he did on the field at Michigan. And that's very, very dangerous.
Think we see any big trades on draft night at this point, John?
Oh, yeah, I think we'll.
No, I mean, let me clarify. Not just move up, but with players. I should have said that. Like T. Higgins?
I don't know. There's talk about that, and if they do, they're going to have to get another receiver for Joe Burrow. The top three are going to be long gone. But, yes, I think we'll see trades. We usually do. I think we'll see some right before it. What I'm interested in is seeing what happens with Minnesota. Everybody has them going to 5 to the Chargers.
Yeah.
So they can get McCarthy or Drake May. And what happens if somebody calls Arizona and says, okay, the Raiders, we'll give you this to trade to the 4th spot, and all of a sudden, boom, Minnesota traded up with the Chargers, and it doesn't do squat for them. I'm also interested, besides the Chargers, to me, they're the key. Do they trade out to a team that wants to see McCarthy? Or what if they take Joe Ault, who we all have going to the Titans? Then I'm guessing the Titans would pivot to one of those great receivers, because Will Levis needs all the great talent around him as he can get, because it's such a deep draft in offensive linemen. I've never seen so many offensive linemen ticketed for the first and then this early in the second round. So I get the Chargers, to me. We know the other teams are going to draft quarterbacks, and we all assume Arizona's going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. So Jim Harbaugh, who needs an offensive tackle and needs a wide receiver desperately.
Yes.
And I think if he stayed there, he would take the second best wide receiver, Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze. And so I can't wait to see what happens with the Chargers.
Yeah, Chargers with 8 picks, but only 3 in the top 100. So that would mean they could get an offer to move back, get more picks, and still address wide receiver later within the top 100, which also at offensive tackle. The other team, though, is the Giants. The Giants are doing their due diligence with these quarterbacks. I don't know. I haven't looked at their number of picks, but they should be able to move up and down a little bit. So keep an eye on New York. They're spending a lot of time with Jaden Daniels, apparently. John, thanks for spending time with us.
Guys, it's my pleasure as always. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
John McClain. Follow him on social at McClain_on_NFL. You can read his great work at HoustonTexans.com.
The man knows football and film.
Should we go to Davey here and wrap up after we get a little weird news?
I think we should. I think at some point.
We had a weird sound that took place outside the studio.
That was the strangest sound. So usually we can kind of guess what it was.
Normally the sounds don't come through the show. I don't know if it did or not on this case. We'll have to see it post-show. But Davey, you poked your head outside to see what's going on. What was that?
Let's start with a weird noise as we get weird.
So, a big thud hit within the studio, and everyone's like, what? Sometimes, now we have heard car accidents happen out
there.
It sounded
like someone rear-ended someone.
And so that was my initial assumption. But then I actually just stepped outside and saw a bird hit the window and land there dead on the sidewalk.
Oh, that was a bird?
Yeah.
Was it like a...
I think it had to be going full speed, too.
Condor?
I mean, that's a pretty big... No, it looked like...
a hawk? Yeah.
I think it was a pigeon. I didn't inspect it too closely, but it looks like a pigeon.
That is Chad's nightmare. Can you imagine if it broke?
You want me to go get it for you, Chad?
No, the dead one? No. Oh, the only good bird for
Chad.
This
is a great opportunity for us to see if it's a drone or not.
The show would have ended for me had a bird actually successfully gone through the glass and gotten in here. I'd be like, all right,
you want to go
have a good Wednesday night, everybody. We're out of here.
It is time for Weird Headlines, and we get weird with Davey Hudson.
And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, talking now.
Guys, my first headline's not that weird in the grand scheme of what this segment usually consists of, but I saw this headline yesterday, and this is actually, I just saw the article on Fox Sports. We had history occur last night in the NBA. The Boston Celtics became the first team ever in NBA history to shoot 0 free throws.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Now, and you might be wondering, well, who were they playing? Well, they were playing the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks only shot two. Two of those were both by Giannis. He went 1 of 2.
2-0 were the fouls?
No, it was just shooting fouls. There were 12 fouls total. I think the Celtics had 8 and
but
the
just
Bucks
free throws,
had 4. But just there were 2 free throws in the entire game.
Chad, this goes back to what you were saying earlier.
Zero defense.
Zero defense.
This is no effort.
It's just hustle, yeah.
I mean, 104-91 final. The Bucks won the game.
Wow.
And 0 free throws for the Boston Celtics. I mean, that is, like, take the worst men's league situation you've ever seen where it's just a bunch of guys not trying to touch each other and not get hurt. That was the NBA game last night between the Bucks and Celtics.
Do you have the full box score pulled up?
Two good teams.
I'm just kidding.
I don't. I just see it was 104-91.
Played where in Boston?
Bucks winning.
I believe this game was in TD Gardens.
Another problem I have with the NBA right now, since we're on the anti-NBA stance right now with this is a terrible headline for the NBA.
What are we not on this?
there was a time where it was very simple to know who the home team was because the home team wore white, as they do in all levels of basketball now until you get to the NBA, and the visiting team wore their colored uniform.
Yes.
I'm looking at a picture right now of the Boston Celtics, Hutton, you can see this, in green. And the Bucks
they were in
black.
Milwaukee. They were in Milwaukee.
Look at this picture. They look like the same team almost. Dark green and then black.
Maybe that's why they didn't guard anyone.
Head to head. Terrible.
Yeah, it looks very it clashes, Chad. It does not look great.
They're
in Milwaukee.
Wearing colors at home.
Which that would check out.
Boston, by the way, 62-17. Not bad. David, what else you have?
It
was 8 fouls for the Celtics, 4-4 Milwaukee.
Sounds like the Tennessee-Purdue discrepancy there.
Yeah. Zach, can he play in this game? Did he already go pro?
He's going to play for one of these teams. I know that.
Second story for today. You know, we've been talking a lot about Kentucky.
Yes.
You know, we got a story out of Kentucky.
All right.
So a Kentucky dad tried to hack the Hawaii death registry because he wanted to fake his own death. And the reasoning behind it is because he wanted to get out of paying a 6-figure child support payment.
I can hear Keith Morrison's open to Dateline NBC right now.
He's is definitely racking up. Hacker Jesse Kipf. Kipf? K-I-P-H.
Jesse needs to learn Hawaiian, Chad.
P-F.
Aloha, everyone.
Yeah, but getting hit with a lot of computer crimes, it's typically the case. It was $116,000 in child support that he owed to his ex.
I'm watching the extent you'd have to go, to like how bad things have to be to fake your own death.
Yeah.
You know, the six figures you said, Davey, this is a six-figure annual.
$116,000 is the
debt.
Well,
but also
he
he's going to Hawaii, right? He's faking his own death and going to Hawaii?
Well, no, he doesn't have to physically go anywhere if he can just get within the state system and just illegally hack into it.
Like McLovin from Hawaii.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, like the lengths that you'll go to have to accomplish something. I'm watching Shogun right now on FX. Great. Absolutely terrific. Cannot recommend it enough. I cannot wait for the show every Tuesday night.
Okay.
But there is a plot line. I'm not going to spoil too much here. There is a plot line where one of the feudal lords of Japan, he's kind of playing a long con.
Torinaga?
Yes, Torinaga. Okay. And he, good work, Davey. And he, in order to accomplish what he's trying to accomplish, has to force his best friend and chief lieutenant to commit suicide, seppuku, in front of everyone. And he does not want this to happen, but he allows it in order to pull off whatever plan that even as the viewer, you have no idea what it is yet that he's trying to do. It looks like he's completely conceded and is about to lose the war. And he is forcing this to happen. And I'm thinking, that is another level of faking your own death by hacking the Hawaii death registry to do that.
Yes.
Just hearing that, Hutt, now you want to watch the show, don't you?
I'm fascinated
you hear
by this, yes.
It all takes place on camera, too, trust me. In case you're wondering, you see all of it.
Jesse also tried to hack into Arizona and Vermont's databases, which it would have been through a private company in which he would have done that.
I'm sure he tried all. Yeah,
what is the easiest to hack? Do we know? Do we have a ranking of easiest state death registry to hack?
He managed.
I'm guessing Vermont.
But how he did it, if you're curious, was he obtained the credentials of a doctor and then tried to get into the back end of the system.
Okay. So
Gavin Newsom had his way. That'd be the easiest one to crack.
I'm sure.
If you wanted to do that, I would say Alaska is probably the best state to try that with because, I mean, it's just there's so much terrain up there. It's like if they were to try to go up there and track it.
Sir, it says here you died of COVID in 2024.
Yeah, what did he die of, does it say?
In Hawaii? Yeah. How did this happen?
COVID.
No. I mean, he took a plea agreement, which I haven't read because it's a lot of pages and I'm kind of lazy when it comes to going through court
documents. I wonder
if the
Matthew Merriman represented him.
I mean, I'm sure everyone has thought, like, what if I could just reset, like, start over?
Chiefsaholics.
Bad
attorney.
Things have happened. I made some bad decisions. I'd like to restart somewhere else, but just not having the means to do that. But a complete reset.
Davey, give us the latest on Charlotte. The Charlotte update.
The damn stingray is yet to give birth. I don't understand. There's, like, some con that's happening.
This is a stingray that is supposed to give birth, but
they
has
don't
been
know
in the
who
water
the father
alone.
Is.
Has been in the water alone, which I said was just a flat out lie.
It's the Virgin Mary of stingrays.
So except Mary had Jesus Christ.
Right.
I did not have this for today because
in this case there's nothing.
A lot of people giving side eye to Joseph in that time. That now there's no stingray to give side eye to.
Yeah, just had to take a massive slam.
They started only giving updates on Saturdays and Wednesdays for Charlotte, and now they're within the last hour. They have an update for April the 10th. Charlotte is continuing on her journey with parinogenesis. That's the situation.
This.
She continues to be healthy and has a great appetite.
The Mexicans that were in the Paint Davey's house, if they had gone into his room, they would have seen a bunch of stuff on Charlotte.
Davey,
all this prep work.
Davey's like our own Brian Fantana on Stingray Watch.
Stingray Watch.
Much like Panda Watch on Anchorman.
Back at it. For the Thursday edition. Hope you'll join us. Hot Mike Hunt and Withrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, right here. Outkick.com/watch.